From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, talk a little bit about miracles, but here's what's happening. A federal appeals court in Cincinnati and in San Francisco upheld the suspension of President Trump's controversial immigration order, a decision that provoked an apparently furious Trump to tweet, "See you in court." The panel of the three judges of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously refused to reinstate the order after a federal judge had issued a halt to the order last week. All three justices all agreed. The Justice Department said it is reviewing this decision, considering its options. Mr. Trump later tweeted, "See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake." Dr. John Curtis, of course, who's been through the campaigns with us and everything else. John, I want to get your reaction, of course. All three, two democratically appointed judges, one Republican, all siding with each other.
Well, and it makes you wonder, George. What I was saying last night was that, you know, when he's tweeting out disparaging comments about the Ninth Circuit Court, I mean, you wonder whether he's really helping his cause. I mean, they ruled essentially to retain the stay, the restraining order, the temporary restraining order that Judge Robart has in Seattle. And Trump is running out of options right now, honestly. The Supreme Court option is not a good option for him at this point. It's a 4-4 majority. It's very doubtful. It's very doubtful that he would even take the case, because really what he's asking them to do is to comment about Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, which involves the executive powers. And the courts essentially ruled, the Ninth Circuit Court, that yes, indeed, there are limits to executive power and decisions regarding national security, and that if we believe that you can't produce any facts that compel us to believe that your campaign statements, which is that, you know, allowing Syrian refugees or Mideast or North African refugees into the United States increases the chance of terrorism, it's one thing to say that on the stump speech. It's another thing to present it in court and then offer proof. They couldn't offer any proof that it increased the risks of terrorism.
Well, why don't we do a better job just vetting the people who come into this country without a ban?
Well, I think it's the vetting process is very difficult because the people coming in virtually have no documentation. But I have to tell you, I think that the cases of terrorism, whether it's in the United States or overseas in Europe, are usually people that have been in the country for quite a while, and they're disgruntled. They're stuck in some ghettoized area. You know, they're herded into these, kind of unfavorable living conditions. And eventually they get frustrated, and, you know, somebody's listening in and on the internet with, you know, some of the kind of radicalized clerics that make the rounds there. And they, there's marginalized people out there, and they get a crazy idea, and they go ram a car, or they try to create a bomb or something. So I'm not sure that any kind of an immigration ban is really going to stop that from happening.
No,
I mean, you'd
I'm
really
sure.
have to, you know, lock, you know, put up a moat. You know, there is a big moat around the United States with the oceans, but you'd have to literally revise the entire immigration laws of the United States that are essentially pretty welcoming to foreigners, you know, coming into this country. So I think they disagreed. There was a compelling argument on Trump's part, and that's why he lost the case. But he's not necessarily going to fare any better in the Supreme Court.
If it goes there, I think he's going to try to push it, John, but I'm not sure. Thank you, Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And President Donald Trump's wall along the U.S.-Mexico border would be a series of fences and walls that would cost as much as $21.6 billion and take more than 3 years to construct, based on U.S. Department of Homeland Security internal reports. Bitcoin prices plunged after two of the largest Chinese digital currency exchanges said they would temporarily suspend customer withdrawals of Bitcoin and Litecoin. So you have your money digitally, and you're trapped. You can't get it out. Well, that's a shocker. U.S. stocks climbing on Thursday with all three major averages touching fresh records immediately after President Trump said that a phenomenal announcement on tax reform would come in a matter of weeks. Let's check in with Bill Spillane, of course, who heads up the FairTax.org group. Bill, what's it going to be, you think? Just tax cuts, or is he going to go to a fair tax?
Well, it won't be exactly the fair tax, George, and I'm delighted to speak with you again. You're my hero. In any case, they're trying to take pieces out of the fair tax and patch it onto an income tax. Well, that's an improvement. It'll be a great improvement if we get it. It's called border adjustable tax. But they ought to go right with the fair tax and get it over with and get it right in the first place.
Exactly. Now, if they do this in piecemeal, what do you think it'll be like?
Well, it'll be like a European tax in the sense that there'll be an income tax, and then there'll be something called, well, you can call it what you want, a giraffe or an elk or anything you want, but the Europeans call it a value-added tax. Now, ours better not be a value-added tax because that's very complicated. It's a mess to administer and costly because of all the fooling around with it, but if it's just a plain sales tax, then it's not too bad.
Reduce your income tax, what if they don't reduce it and we have to pay more on the sales end?
Well, that's no fun either. they want to reduce the corporate tax from 35, the highest in the world, down to what Trump wants is 15 or Congress wants is 20. I suspect it will go more towards 15, so the cost of a product will be much less. And then when you add the tax on top, it shouldn't make a whole lot of difference. But the big change will be that it will attract businesses to the United States, whereas
right.
we're driving them away with our tax code now.
Exactly.
It's a little complicated.
Right.
I'll be happy to try to explain that. But our tax code drives jobs overseas, drives businesses overseas, and you'd have to be dumb to start a new business and start it in the United States if you cared about finances and money and profits and so forth. If you put it in Europe or Cayman Islands or something like that, then you got it made somewhere offshore. But that's the problem. That's what we have to fix. And finally, after 20 years, the Congress is taking our idea to have a border adjustable tax.
Bill, let's see what he proposes and get you back to get your reaction in a week or so, okay?
Great, sir.
Bill Spillane heads up the FairTax.org. A powerful winter storm bearing down on the Northeast forced thousands of flight cancellations, snarling traffic plans for flyers all around the country, dumping more than a foot of snow in some areas. The airlines canceled more than 3,500 flights Wednesday through Friday. What a mess. Firefighters say a man was rescued after being trapped inside of a garbage truck as it drove for more than 10 miles. The Scottsdale Fire Department in Arizona says the man was rescued after the garbage truck driver heard screaming. Police believe the man in his 30s was sleeping inside of a dumpster when the truck emptied it. The man was transported to a hospital. He has a head injury. He's lucky that's all he's got. A New Jersey woman who is the oldest American person has died at the age of 114. Adelaide Dunlap died Sunday at a hospital, according to the Martin Funeral Home in New Jersey. Birthdays. The greatest storyteller ever born in one of our coast-to-coast favorite guests, Lionel Fanthorpe, just turned 82 years old. Happy birthday, Lionel.
Thank you so much. And could I also take the opportunity to thank all of those listeners and your colleagues who, with tremendous kindness, sent me good wishes when I was unwell and prayed for me and told me they were praying for me. And I'm feeling a tremendous lot better than I have been for several weeks.
So you sound strong.
Yeah, I feel great again now, George, and it's lovely to be on your show and to listen to you and your news bulletin. Makes me feel young again.
Well, you are young, and I want you to keep getting better. Happy birthday. You and Patricia, what did you do to celebrate?
Well, our daughter took us out, first of all, went to the museum here in Cardiff where they've got a brand new exhibit, terrific exhibit, of dinosaurs, because a small new dinosaur was discovered here in Wales, and they put this big exhibition up. Then she took us for a superb lunch, and then in the afternoon, We got out the board games that we used to play with them when they were kids. And even though we're all grown up now, we had a wonderful afternoon playing board games.
They're still fun. You keep getting better, and let's get you back here as soon as you can, okay?
I'd love to, George. Nothing I'd rather do than be on your show.
Lionel Vanthorpe, 82 years old, and what a wonderful person. He'd been sick for several months, and that's why you haven't heard him on the program. But he sounds better, and well wishes to him. Up next, we're going to talk about several subjects. Secrets of Ancient America and also cannabis and hemp. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tell you a little bit about our guest. Carl Lehrberger is the company founder, director, chief operations officer of Pure Vision Technologies. Now, he also serves as a senior manager and has been the very instrumental in advancing many aspects of operations since its inception. He's been a leader in the field of environmental technologies, of course, a principal of Solar Technology Corporation as well. He's written a book called Secrets of Ancient America. He was with me about 2 years ago, but we're going to talk with him about that. And later on this program, we're going to talk with him about hemp and cannabis and what's happening in that arena. Carl, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you again, George, and greetings to Coast Radio fans and listeners.
You sound like you've been busy the last couple of years, my friend.
Well, I have, as a result of the book Secrets of Ancient America, Archaeoastronomy and the Legacy of the Phoenicians, Celts, and Other Foreign Explorers, I have been on the lecture circuit. I've been following you around, it seems. I was in contact in the desert,
yeah.
It's been a whirlwind. But, you know, I had to go out and get a job. I had to go to work, George.
Well, and you're still running a handful of companies. Well,
that's my job.
Let us talk a little bit about the work of Secrets of Ancient America. Later on tonight, we'll talk about the cannabis and hemp and what's happening in that arena as well, and to find out why you're involved in that. But let's go back. I mean, you are multifaceted, Carl. I mean, you're an anti-nuke activist. You're a history researcher. You're an entrepreneur. You've got it all. What do you favor? What do you enjoy? All of them?
I've got a passion for being a MythBuster, and that is the basis of Secrets of Ancient America. You know, we've been lied to about our history, and even in the mass media today, it's a constant barrage of deceit. And so, you know, I have done my best to reveal some of the secrets of ancient America, to bust the myth that Columbus discovered America, that old world peoples from both Europe and Africa and Asia couldn't make it to America when in fact they did. So it's a passion. And for me to be out in the field and doing field work in the Great Basin and the deserts, there's just nothing finer. So I enjoy having an eclectic life. And it's just great to have reached the position of crafting Secrets of Ancient America and having a dialogue with you about it. So that's what it's all about.
Well, you've documented many discoveries in your book. Let's talk about some of them. And how did you uncover them, Carl?
Perseverance. You know, once you get the lightning strike that, wow, there is something here and I've got to get into it, it's really sticking to it. And in 1986, I read a book by Barry Fell called America BC, a very controversial Harvard professor. And in this book, Dr. Fell talked about Celtic people coming to America and the Phoenicians being here long before Columbus. And I just couldn't believe it. I was floored when I read this. I thought I was a pretty intelligent person. And that set off a quest to, I was in New England at that time, to explore everything that Dr. Fell had documented in his book, America BC, and other books, including Bronze Age America and Saga America. And lo and behold, Barry Fell was really on to something, that we have been lied to about our history, that the Columbus was not first but last. And remarkably, these ancient travelers, and in some cases settlers, left their mark here for us to uncover. And that was a very exciting part of my life, to be involved in meeting people that have been exploring these old world sites and these ancient sites throughout North America for decades. And it's really through the experts and teachers that I came across that took their time, were very patient with me, took me out into the field, shared with me their knowledge, that I got to the point where I was informed and all of a sudden was able to read some of these petroglyphs out there and beginning slowly to get to a position where I can make my own discoveries. But I must say, George, that the field of the new history is rich with scientists, dust kickers, cowboys, anthropologists, geologists that have looked into the connections of America before Columbus with ancient peoples and come up with startling evidence that Columbus was last, not first. And it's just an honor as well as a passion to be involved in revealing a new history.
And some of those ancients who got here how much earlier than Columbus? Hundreds of years?
Well, no, we're talking thousands of years.
Wow.
The Phoenicians, which go back, 2000 BC, we're not talking about stories or mythology. We're talking about Phoenician writing in the Punic language in stone being found off the coast of Maine and off the coast of Massachusetts going back thousands of years. And that was probably perhaps not even the beginning. But there was a thriving commerce in North America centered around the copper trade in the Great Lakes area. And for literally thousands of years, the Phoenicians, as well as other travelers, would come to America by ship and be able to mine surface deposits of very pure, rich copper. And that was really one of the driving factors of these ancient from not only Europe coming to the New World for minerals and gold and silver and copper, but from Pacific cultures, such as Greater India and Indus Valley, coming across this Pacific to California looking for gold and silver. And in those days, there was a lot of surface deposits, just like, in the gold rush of the 49ers. Those early miners were able to find surface gold and placer gold. Well, imagine what it was like before the white man got here. So there was a rich commerce with old world peoples going back thousands of years, both on the West Coast and on the East Coast, partially driven by seeking gold, silver, and copper.
Carl, how did they know how to get here? Was it just trial and error? Do you think they got into a boat and a ship and just said, let's keep going until we hit something?
Well, that's a great question, and we can only speculate. But one thing that we can be sure of, and that is that our image of these old world peoples as being, kind of primitive and not knowledgeable is completely wrong. When we consider that the ships that Columbus used to get to America in 1492, they were very, very small ships compared to some of the Celtic ships and certainly the Indus Valley ships that would host hundreds of sailors and include elephants to come over. So they had a very sophisticated shipping industry. These were masters of navigation, of astronomy, of astrology, of mineralogy. And they, after trial and error, one would presume, were able to use the currents, both the Pacific and the Atlantic, to seasonally make trips to America. To load up their ships with gold, silver, and copper. you know, part of the book, George, is Secrets of Ancient America, has been walking a fine line. I did my very best to, in the book, be very factual and not speculate so much.
Exactly. Carl, stay with us. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about Secrets of Ancient America. Then we'll get involved into the work you're doing with legalization of marijuana, cannabis, hemp, what's happening in that arena. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Carl Lehrberger with us as we talk about Secrets of Ancient America. Great discoveries. What would you say, Carl, might have been the most dramatic discovery of the Secrets of Ancient America?
Well, George, I as I was saying at the end there, I did my best to find the smoking gun, the discoveries that really had proof. They weren't speculation, they weren't opinion, they weren't mythology. And what I found to be the most credible existence of proof of these ancient explorers is the story of the Celts in America, because the Celts actually had a civilization here starting in New England. And even today, your listeners can go to Salem, New Hampshire, and view one of the large, expansive Celtic sites in called let me see. It's a site in Salem, and it'll come to me.
That's right.
But the Celts expanded from America's Stonehenge, that's the name of the site, and followed the rivers and made it across the Mississippi into Colorado, Oklahoma, and Kansas. And there they left their writing in caves that can be read. And the writing was often written with symbols that denoted astronomy and archaeoastronomy, that is, the science of the stars and the planets and how they affected ancient people. And we see these Celtic alignments on very special days accompanied by the writing in the Celtic language called Ogham. And it, to me, this has the smoking gun proof that not only were the Celts, did they have one or two ships that made it to New England and went back. No, there were literally thousands of Celts in the greater New England, called that we might as well call it Greater Ireland, and they made it at least halfway across the continent, where we find their writing in caves in Colorado and Oklahoma. So to me, that was the most exciting discovery, and what I consider to be the most credible proof that these ancient travelers did make it to America, and Columbus was last, not first.
Did they stay, Carl, or did they just keep going back and forth?
I think when we're talking about the merchants and the miners, that they had a back and forth. But when we're talking about them heading out and doing the explorations, I don't think they stayed. What we have seen is that with the rise of Rome and the destruction of the Celtic navies by the Romans, transatlantic travel came to an end. And many of the settlers or miners that were over here probably did their best to preserve their culture, but were most likely wiped out by Native Americans, or they became integrated into Native American tribes. I mean, it was a very hostile environment for travelers coming to America, and it's quite possible that many of those that were stranded here ended up dying in battles with the Native Americans, and those that joined Native tribes just became integrated into the culture. So once the Romans had destroyed the Celtic navy, it was pretty much an end to that migration. However, later in the 1300s and 1200s, we see the old Irish which are not necessarily Celtic, but a later group of Europeans coming over, and we see their writing in caves in Kentucky, and it's not the same Ogham from the earlier group of Celts that inhabited New England and then came to Colorado. But nevertheless, it's a old Irish writing that can be read and interpreted and visited. So it's not that it just ended with the Romans. There was transoceanic travel, not only by the Celts and the earlier Phoenicians, but many other groups from Asia and the greater Indus Valley that made it to the New World.
We've had a guest who has passed on, Glenn Kimball, who talked about hieroglyphs being found in the Grand Canyon, Egyptian hieroglyphs, and that would be amazing. Did you come across anything like that?
Well, this is one of the great mysteries of the new history of America. It was documented in Arizona by a newspaper over 3 days. It was headline news in this Arizona paper that the Smithsonian archaeologists had made an incredible discovery of Egyptian mummies and Egyptian statues and Egyptian writing in a cave in the Grand Canyon. But since those three newspaper articles appeared, the Smithsonian went silent. In fact, they said they never were there, and whatever was taken out was never brought to public light. And while it is reported in the literature, that particular cave in the Grand Canyon is still closed off today.
Well, how about that?
To the best of my knowledge, nobody has gone back since 1919 because the powers that be don't want us to know what was in that cave, and God forbid it was Egyptians here thousands of years, leaving perhaps esoteric knowledge and writing for us and our children to learn about them and in fact learn about ourselves. So it's one of the mysteries that we really can't document until the Smithsonian opens up its records or until the government allows independent archaeologists to visit that cave once again. Now there are other cases of relics from the Egyptians making it and to the New World and being discovered, including a scarab that I cite in the book, and many other incidences that we can't claim as proof, but is certainly indicative that the Egyptians were here in America. And boy, wouldn't we all like
to
see what was buried in the Grand Canyon.
And Carl, why keep it a secret? If these things have happened, why does government just try to suppress it? I mean, what's the harm in telling us the truth?
Well, that's the question, George. And we could say the same thing about the so-called UFO phenomena. We could talk about the same thing when we're talking about 9-1-1 and what happened at 9-1-1 or the Kennedy assassination or all these areas of so-called conspiracies. And it all comes down to the question you're asking. Why do the powers that be feel they have to protect us from what? Knowing our history? And I think that's what it really comes down to. Power. That in the case of the what we're talking about with the new history of America, the archaeologist and the archaeopriest, which is somewhat of a term that I came up in the book that really represents not only the church but the archaeology priesthood that want to preserve their presentation of reality to the rest of us. And that anything that flies in the face of that takes away their power, their knowledge, their position. And unfortunately, when it comes to academia, this has really hurt us because we have a young generation of archaeologists, anthropologists that I think would be chopping at the bit to get into the field and look at some of this Celtic material in Greater Indus Valley. Petroglyphs and Hebrew writing in New Mexico. But because of this priesthood in academia, these kind of discoveries, this type of research is not encouraged, so we're kept into the dark. So I think the sad answer to the question, George, is that it's all about the power of deceit to maintain the current power structure, whether we're talking about 911 or whether we're talking about Egyptians in the Grand Canyon long before Columbus.
That's kind of disappointing, isn't it, Carl?
It's depressing. It really is. And it leaves most of us in the dark about our history. And really, the ancients left a history for us, not only to learn about them. Hey, they were here, you know, and in some cases, like, for example, the Kensington Runestone, you know, found in Minnesota, it actually has a date on it. I think it was like a 1386 or something. And it tells the story of a group of travelers from Vinland, and they lay claim to the land. And, well, there's a little history there, you know, for us. But it's not just a, hey, you know, Joe was here and he put his date. It is that some of these petroglyphs and the archaeoastronomy on specific days of the year, like equinox and solstice and the cross quarter days, they tell a story of this ancient culture. They tell about their cosmology and the unification of humans and spirit. So there's really not just a singular message, but a very dynamic message, not just for us, but it's our children's children. That knowledge, that esoteric wisdom, you know, is there for our children, and it's being hidden, or in many cases destroyed. And that's really the tragedy for not only Americans who are, you know, somewhat lost, not knowing their history, but for our children. It's a gift, you know, waiting for our children. So that's the tragedy, and I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, the remarkable thing, George, is that on shows like yours, you have guests that are very credible, and they provide evidence. And in the case of Secrets of Ancient of America, it's, I would argue, proof that these ancient peoples were here. But how do we get that out to the media? And I would posit that the paradigm of the new history will shift when we see National Geographic or the Smithsonian Magazine have an article talking about the travels of the Celts in America, or featuring America's Stonehenge in New Hampshire, or having a research paper on the Kensington Runestones from Minnesota. But none of that has happened. And that's why it's shows like yours that are so important in keeping people informed that are reaching out. One of the problems in our area is that the researchers, the money's not there, and the interest on the part of the academics aren't there, because we're all working so hard, and there's a lack of leisure time. I mean, that's what I was alluding to before. I had to go out and work full time for Pure Hemp Technology.
Oh, sure.
I can't afford to go out and do the good work. So we are in a dilemma here in this country and the dilemma is, how do we work through the brainwashing that we're constantly bombarded with?
Now, I've been to Cahokia. I've been to the mounds there, and you say that there's something somewhat controversial about that. What is that?
Well, I don't think Cahokia or the mound builders themselves are controversial. It was a Native American civilization that was very profound, and the Cahokia is as large as any of the pyramids found in North America. What is controversial is that in some of these mounds that were uncovered in the late 1800s and early 1900s, they discovered old world relics. And these relics, including the Bat Creek Stone, is one of them. Demonstrate that in some of these tombs and temples, there was contact with the old world. That's the controversial thing. And what makes it so controversial is that there's been a history of deceit with so many hoaxes and frauds that have been perpetrated. And in the case of relics of Michigan, there are literally thousands of so-called artifacts coming from Egypt or an old world culture that people, good-hearted people, think are proof that Egyptians were in America and that they had contact with the mound builder people. But what I discovered is that in many, if not most of the cases of these so-called Michigan relics or in tablets, that they've been faked. And this is the controversial thing, that we have a lot of fakery going on. And it really makes it difficult for the scientists, the archaeologists, the anthropologists, and even dust kickers like myself to go out and say, well, was this a fake tablet? Or is this something that was created in somebody's basement in, 1830? And so that's really the controversy. The second part of the controversy is that whether or not the Cahokian and mound builder culture had contact with European cultures. And the priest and the archaeologist would say, no, they don't. But it seems, based on some of these relics coming out of the tombs and even some of the architecture, that it was quite likely that there was contact with European cultures. And if you think of the highways of early America, they were the river systems that crisscrossed this country. So one of the most important river systems is the Mississippi River. And we see the copper coming from the Michigan and that part of North America coming down the Mississippi River and into the Gulf of Mexico to head back to Europe. But we also seen one of the entrances, the gateways to North America is the Mississippi River in the Gulf of Mexico, where they came in and traveled upwards. So this part of the history of the mound builders has not been told and not thoroughly explored, and that's really what I think is the controversy.
Okay, and when we come back next hour, we want to take phone calls with you, Carl, but I want to talk about your work in the hemp arena and cannabis and see what's going on there. That's pretty dramatic, and we'll get into that. Would you give us your website? So, of course, you've got a couple of them. We've got them linked up, but what are your favorites here?
Well, for those interested in the new history of America, please visit www.newhistoryofamerica.com, and visitor can see the site and get a copy of Secrets of Ancient America. So that's newhistoryofamerica.com.
All right, very good. We're going to come back in just a moment here with Carl Lehrberger as we talk about, of course, the secrets of ancient America, but also his involvement with cannabis and hemp and what's happening there. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.